You know what? The other day, I was reading an article on Wired magazine. You ever heard of Wired magazine, Bethany? I think most people have probably heard of Wired magazine. They did a big spread with Chris Hardwick on the new Episode 7 news and a bunch of articles. You know what was in the first sentence? What are my pet peeves about Star Wars? I'll tell you one of them. It's Lucasfilms. It's very similar. So yes, no, the article on Wired.com introduced is From Lightsabers to Jedis. And I was just like, whack, whack, whack. Ah, it's Wired magazine. You would think of mainstream. I don't know where the miscommunication fell, but the plural of Jedi is Jedi, not Jedis. 7 years ago, no, wow, 9 years ago in middle school, when I was adapting the Phantom Menace VHS tape to a three-act children's play for the Chattanooga Children's Theater, and I sent it over to a fellow homeschool friend's mom, and she edited the play. She edited the part to say Jedis as the plural and where I was writing it, and I was like, Miss Patterson, no, it is not Jedis. 13-year-old Riley was explaining to this grown woman that the plural of Jedi is Jedi. So Wired Magazine, if Miss Patterson can get it, why can't you?
Are you going to make me play devil's advocate here?
In just a moment. You're listening to the Star Wars Report podcast. Let's get this thing rolling.
Wait.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's a little trial there. Trial run for a cold opening. Welcome back to the Star Wars Report podcast. I'm your host for this evening, Riley Blanton. And before we do the introductions, we'll start with Mark Herleman. You're going on the gun. What's your devil's advocacy?
Oh, man. You know, I'm with you on this. It should always be Jedi, but they did a while back approve Jedis as a plural. So it has been retconned, unfortunately, and that is an approved saying as much as I and you hate it.
Okay. And just plugged in her microphone because it wasn't working because of the consummate professional that I am in podcasting, is my dear sister and co-host, co-founder of the Star Wars Report, Bethany Blanton. Welcome back. Welcome back.
Greetings, everyone. Excited to be on the show tonight. Just have to ask to make sure. Mm-hmm. Mark and Brian, can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Indeed.
Yes. Okay, good.
Well, and we dropped the ball. All right, welcoming to the show for the first time someone who I wish was a good friend. Hopefully after tonight that will change. We've encountered him briefly at conventions. I've been a longtime follower of yours, Brian. It is indeed Brian Young from Big Shiny Robot fame, and now the Full of Sith podcast. Welcome to the show, Brian.
Thank you for having me.
I'm excited to talk to you, Brian, because for a number of reasons. But I'm going to do as I want to do when we bring a new guest on, especially when I followed your internet career in some form or fashion. I want to rewind back to, I want to say it was Dragon Con 2011. Yes, it was, yep. Dragon Con 2011, fall 2011, Labor Day weekend. And there was a Sounds of Star Wars panel. And now at Dragon Con, there are a number of Star Wars panels. There's a whole Star Wars track to the programming. And some of them are very good, some of them are not. There's a heavy, heavy Expanded Universe fan segment that goes to Dragon Con. There are also usually actors that are there that are doing it. But in this case, I remember, I was vaguely familiar with you, Brian, but you were up on this panel, and it was the Sounds of Star Wars, and it was being introduced. It was very interesting background insight into R2-D2, and it was a 501st guy, or rather, I believe he was 501st, but he was primarily an R2-D2 droid builders club member, and he was talking about the sounds of the droids in Star Wars and some musical moments, playing audio clips, very much enjoying the panel. And then about halfway through the panel, here it came, the prequel dig. It's like something, I don't even remember what it is because it's now over a year ago, but I just remember thinking this a year and a half ago, all that registered was something, 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 the Phantom Menace sucked, which you kind of used to as a Star Wars fan on the internet. But I just remember you were up on stage behind the mic, behind the panel, and Brian, I saw the most pronounced and vivid eye roll I have ever seen. And that stuck in my mind as that's Brian Young. And so after that, I kind of followed your And I remember, and before that, we didn't meet in person, but that was when we actually first had an opportunity to meet Brian Young. And now I will finally let you talk, sir, after I've been rambling on. But that was my first impression. I think that actually says something.
I can't imagine that I would have let him get away with just an eye roll.
Well, and I do think that there was a conversation that went on after that, but that was what stuck with me.
yeah, no. And actually, the guy who did that panel is the guy who's doing the full-size Millennium Falcon.
Really?
Oh, okay.
So that's awesome. And that's up in what, Knoxville or Nashville, Tennessee?
Yeah, I think it's in Tennessee. I actually ran into him at the Geek Media Expo in October, and we met up and talked. And
did you straighten him out?
I straighten everybody out about the prequels, but
yes, you do.
No, we chatted, and it was, you know, good to see you kind of thing. And he told me he was the guy doing that, and I was very excited. So hopefully there will be some progress on it that we can all see soon.
Now that project, that looks like a really, really cool project. Man, I need to find an excuse to get to, I believe it's Nashville. But that's the kind of thing that I wouldn't mind. That's the kind of thing you would think that they would get out to a celebration or something.
Yeah.
If you did it.
Well, I mean, if they can do it with Firefly, why not with the Millennium Falcon?
They did it with Firefly?
Yeah, Serenity. They made the entire ship, but although it was two different sets, but from one end to the other, they replicated the entire thing. I've always thought that was a really cool way of going about it.
Cool.
Well, and they're doing the Star Trek Next Generation Enterprise bridge as well, and you know who the Belgian 501st. We've all seen what kind of random stuff they can build out of nothing.
That's just that's incredible stuff, man. Well, but Brian, I do have some actual prepared questions for you, but I'm just curious. Something that we always like to ask is, what's your story? Not with Star Wars, but specifically when you started getting your feet wet into the online community. How did your fandom begin to first manifest online?
My Star Wars fandom?
Yes.
I'll tell you, the first thing that I ever Googled in my entire... It wasn't Google. I say Google now, but the first thing I ever looked up on the internet, the first time I encountered the internet, because I'm old enough to have lived without it, I sat down in the library, which is the first place that had internet connectivity, and typed in StarWars.com. And there was just about nothing there. And I found a picture of Boba Fett, and that was about it.
Now, when was this?
This was, oh man, this was like 96, 97.
Oh man.
I was in high school. It was a long time ago. And so my first exposure to all of this Star Wars-wise was just following the official Star Wars website as soon as it came on. It's weird. You can go to the Internet Archive at archive.org. And take a trip on the internet time machine, and I tell you, there's nothing that makes you feel older than going back and looking at the original StarWars.com website designs. Wow. And I remember following the Phantom Menace news as it came out, and you know those first headshots that they released of Liam Neeson, and they're like, Liam Neeson's playing a venerable Jedi Knight, and that's it, you know.
And those were in the, what was the Behind the Magic CD? Do you remember that, Brian?
Yes, I remember the Behind the Magic CD.
Oh, I think those headshots were on that, if I'm remembering correctly.
And that was all from that early website. You know, that first StarWars.com website where there was like six pages and it was just headshots of actors that were going to be in Phantom Menace, which came later, which was after I had started, you know, the special editions were out, and they did some promotion for that.
Wow.
And, as far as getting into the online actual community, I would have to say it was probably Clone Wars that got me into that. I was the first person, I was the only person for a couple of seasons reviewing every episode of the show, and it was only because I'd already had Big Shiny Robot going. And, you know, that was my introduction into the community. And that's how I met, like, the people over at Club Jade. It's how I met you guys. It's how I got hooked up with all the people at StarWars.com. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's how that's how I'm writing for StarWars.com now.
Yeah, and I do want to touch on that at some point, but so you've at this point reviewed every single episode, have you not?
I have.
Man, wow. So did you see Clone Wars going 5 seasons?
No. I don't know if you guys remember, but back in the original announcements, they said that this was going to go 100 episodes, 4 seasons, mm-hmm. and that's it.
I do vaguely remember 22
episodes, or 22 minutes, 22 seasons, or 22 episodes per season.
Yeah, and that's and here we are today, and now after a 5th season, it looks like Clone Wars is up in the air at this point. And Brian, just kind of fast forwarding, and we're not really this is not any kind of in depth chronological thing. I'm just this is more driven by my curiosity than anything else. But
no, that's
but you
fine.
Were at the screening
I'm good
recently.
With that.
All right, I like it. You were at the screening recently, and you had a chance to. I was reading on Big Shiny Robot that you had the chance to. Talk to some of the guys there, and it sounds like it is indeed up in the air at this point.
It sounds like it. I got a lot of no comments, and really? I got how to say this without getting myself or anyone else into trouble, but season 6 seems to be done for all intents and purposes.
That's from people I've talked to, yeah, that's what I'm hearing.
And reading tea leaves from Twitter and listening to some of the writers tweeting about things, they're working on stuff beyond that. And if you listen to how everyone's... If you know how Clone Wars works, that they produce more episodes per season than they air...
Yeah, yeah.
Then you know that there's still a whole bunch of episodes left over for... That just haven't aired from previous seasons. So... Season 6 is,
I was
for all
aware
intents
of that
and purposes, produced. There's, another almost a season's worth of content, it seems like, of other seasons that just hasn't aired. And then they're working on another season beyond that. So conceivably, they're into 8 seasons.
Wow.
And Pablo... Oh, go ahead.
No,
go
I was
ahead.
Just curious because I knew that with this season, obviously, we're only doing 20 episodes. So they have additional episodes from previous seasons.
Do you remember, I think it was season 4 where they had like the Mandalorian plot and stuff like that. And that was all the first half of the season.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. The famous
That was
tea.
All leftovers from 2 and 3.
Okay.
Is my understanding. And that season 4 episodes produced for season 4 didn't start until the mid-season break of season 4,
and that could lend itself in some way to see. And I'm just learning all this, Brian. I'll be honest, because that kind of would explain a whole lot in terms of the way the back half of the seasons always seem to be the best episodes for like the past 3 or 4 seasons.
Yeah. I'm not necessarily sure that's the case with this season. I think they've hit their stride, which is why you see, the Younglings arc I thought was fantastic. And I know a lot of people were down on the Droids arc, but I loved, there's so much of that to love. And, the Darth Maul stuff was fantastic.
Oh, you're
and
not.
That
you're
started
not
the season.
See, I don't know where I remember hearing, but somewhere I remember hearing that they had enough stuff that they were out into the 8th season. And I remember when I heard that, I was like, whoa, that's insane. But I think it was like 3rd season when I heard that. And it was one of those things where they were talking about, well, they're 2 to 3 seasons out in the head and they've got stuff and the way it's shuffling, it's looking really good. Looks like we're going to have it. And that was when they were saying, we're going to continue as long as it's popular. And it was like, whoa, this could easily be a 10-season run. But now it's not looking so hot.
Well, it looks like that stuff is still getting produced. I mean, James Arnold Taylor was tweeting just a few weeks ago that he was recording.
I saw that, yeah.
Right now, everyone is acting as if things are continuing. So that's a very positive, hopeful sign, right?
Well, see, and then, Brian, that's where I was Absolutely. About a week ago, because I just remember I was always thinking when someone says, well, it wasn't picked up, but it wasn't on that Cartoon Network schedule. It's all over. And I saw that, a few weeks ago when that was coming out. And I was thinking to myself, no, we know that they're still in production. And just the, forgive me, Brian, I'm going to introduce a foreign concept to the internet here, but my logic dictated to me that if they're still working on at least, you know, one, possibly two seasons ahead, there are certainly plans for that content to come to fruition. But, you know, the Rebel Force Radio guys...
that, but look at Detours.
Yeah. Nothing. Yeah. I mean, look at 1313. Have we heard anything since Celebration on 1313?
Other than this arc kind of explores some of the same geography, I've heard some rumblings that there's maybe an expectation it might not even end up coming out.
Well, according to Kotaku, if that's how they pronounce their name, they have a report that says that,
yeah, that was today.
They have sources today they announced that say that the game's development has been frozen for the time being. But I'm not certain how accurate that would be.
Well,
that would be in line with things
that,
I've heard.
Yeah.
Well, we also heard PlayStation 4 was talking about that they're working on a Star Wars game for that new console, which and they haven't said much beyond that.
LucasArts is on the list of developers that Sony's working with. So I've heard people say, well, maybe maybe mum's the word because they're trying to, you know, redevelop the game for PlayStation. I'm not a huge gamer, so I haven't followed it too closely anyway, but with these recent episodes, the themes.
So they went around all of the different levels with these
13, 12, 13, 15.
They did 13, 12, 13, 15, 13, 14, 13, 14.
Somewhere in the back of my head.
Well, I heard one of the scenes in there, 13 was actually the location.
Yeah, but I was expecting them, almost expecting in the episode to hear, well, we need to be on level 13, 14 for thus and such, and then somebody else would say, no, see, I thought that was on level 13, 13. Maybe it's there, and then they would be like, nope, it's on 13, 14, and then all the fans would be, what? That just made me laugh during the episode. It was quite funny. You know that Dave Filoni somewhere is just grinning.
Now, Brian, you follow Clone Wars a lot more closely than I do, and I'll be frank, and I'm one of the biggest proponents and fans of the Clone Wars, but you, like I say, you've reviewed every single episode. I'm just curious what you know, because now this went from, you know, oh, I'm going to talk to Brian Young, to now I'm like, I've got to know Brian. I want to know something, and that
what
is...
What I've told you is what I know. The only scoop I might have there, I don't know if you listened to our Clone Wars episode of Full of Sith, but we actually ran...
I did.
So you know that we ran our interviews that I did at the red carpet of the Clone Wars premiere of season 5, and there's an Order 66 arc that we didn't see in season 5 that got pulled somewhere.
And by the way, I'm pulling up the website right now. Go to fullofsith.com, guys, and hey, now's as good a time as any. I just want to say, let's see. Rumor Control.
Wait,
Harrison
I have
Ford
to
edition.
Add something here. Oh. When you say Order 66 arc, what exactly does that mean? Because
and to butt in briefly, Brian, just to let the listeners know, it's episode 9 of Full of Sith, and that's by far, that's where you can actually go hear the actual interviews. But yes, continue.
You know, I'm not sure. The best I got was, I think it was D. Baker who told me that, you know, someone had to program Order 66, and that was as close of a tease as I got.
Yeah, it was D. Baker, and if I remember correctly from when I was listening to the episode, Matt Lanter also alluded to it.
Yeah.
Which, you're right, is a scoop. That's and listening to it, I mean, it sounds a little sketchy with, oh, it was a hint or alluded to, but if you listen to the interview, there's definitely something there.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's the difference between podcasting and blogging, is that if you interview someone for a blog, I mean, this is just my personal you just don't get that. And if we're a big fan of a show, you know, to where we're listening to the interviews with these actors, which I know a lot of our listeners are, you do, Brian, with Full of Sith, when you get that kind of personal touch where you can hear in someone's voice that there's something there, that makes a huge difference. So I gotta ask, what's the Full of Sith experience been like? What was the genesis of the project, and to let our listeners know, because if they aren't aware, they should be. It's a fantastic podcast.
Oh, thank you. Full of Sith was I get invited, I have been invited to do a lot of Star Wars podcasts, and I love doing them, and I've done lots of them, and I totally enjoy it, but I started.
But let's be honest, it's kind of a drag to be on here. I mean,
it's not at all. It's not. If there's one thing in this life that I love, it's talking about Star Wars. All so right. It's not ever a drag at all to talk Star Wars with people. And I kind of felt like I wanted one of my own and wanted something that could reflect how I feel about Star Wars, where I didn't have to be on the defensive at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that Mike, who's the co-host, Mike Pilot, was a big podcaster, but he'd never been in the Star Wars online community at all. And he loved Star Wars. He's got Star Wars tattoos all the way up his arms. And I texted him one day and I said, "Why aren't we doing a Star Wars podcast?" And he texted me back and he said, "I'm overexposed on podcasts right now. And I told my wife just a week ago that the only other podcast I would ever do is if it were Star Wars with Brian Young. So you texting me this right now must be fate of some kind.
The will of the Force."
And very quickly we decided that we wanted Consetta Parker, who runs Parker Publicity and does the publicity for Rancho Obi-Wan on the show.
Mm-hmm.
And this was maybe October of last year, and we decided that January would be our launch date.
When in October?
It was a couple of weeks after the... Well, no, I mean, the announcement was like a couple of days before the...
Before November, if I remember correctly.
The big announcement. So it might have been... It might have been like Halloween or the day after.
Okay, yeah.
Where we decided it, because it was a reaction to, I got so many calls for people asking for my comment. You know, I mean, MTV sure. called me asking for how I felt about the announcement and so on. And so it was like, I think people are going to be interested in what I have to say about Star Wars. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we just put things together from there because it seemed like there was going to be a reason for it.
Wow. I mean, things came together. I want to tell you guys, there are a lot of fantastic Star Wars podcasts, but the emphasis I'll put on that sentence is a lot. And I think even since the 789 announcement, I've just been watching the old iTunes store, and it's just, I think it's fantastic to see all this huge influx of people who are getting into the world of podcasting. And you guys... And I don't want to take the risk of offending anyone, but I just want to move forward and say you guys are by far the best Star Wars podcast I've listened to in terms of your launch and your first few episodes. You guys, you know, right out the gate, you had Steve Sansweet, and like you said, you had Consetta Parker, and I believe it's Bobby Roberts.
Bobby Roberts. He's a big name in podcasting too.
I know. I mean, Bonnie Burton. I mean, just go down the list. You guys not only are getting great guests on, but great Star Wars fans on as guests. I just think it's a really great, great podcast that our listeners, if they have not, by all means, hit up fullofsith.com. It's very super easy to subscribe and stuff. But that it's really quickly. And I'm not blowing smoke. It's really quickly become, you know, one of my top 2-3 must listen to Star Wars podcasts. I really, really enjoy it.
Thank you very much. I'm glad. And we've got a lot of stuff coming up that I would feel bad talking about because anything can fall through. But there's some stuff coming up that'll make that'll make all of this stuff pale in comparison.
Oh, man. Can't wait. Cannot wait. Wow. Well, I've got to ask you then a question that. That I thought to myself, if I ever had you on the show, I would ask. And you're probably going to get, you know, have a pretty good idea of what this is. But I'll begin it by telling a brief story for the benefit of you and our listeners. A podcaster who I have great admiration for, really enjoy a lot of his shows, is Brian Brushwood. I don't know if any of you guys have heard of him, but he's with the Twit Network. He does a bunch of different shows. He does NSFW show. But I'm a big fan. I mean, I've been a big fan of podcasting, and there are certain podcasters that I really just like to listen to almost anything they do, and he's one of them. Hates the prequels. But you know how they say whenever you say but in a sentence, you have to cancel everything before the sentence? Somewhat humorously, that might actually be the case. But in all seriousness, and his partner in crime on the NSFW show, and I'm sure there's got to be like someone out there who listens to both these shows. But his name is Justin Robert Young. Also, not a big fan of the prequels. Not quite the level of hatred. But I heard something fascinating a few weeks ago on one of Justin's shows. And pardon me, I would link this up, but it's all just in the back of my brain. And it was this. And this is, I think, something that you've probably heard a lot, Brian. It was, Justin said, and I paraphrase, "You know, I remember being in high school when The Phantom Menace came out, and I just, when I got out of that movie theater, I was jacked. I was excited, man. And somewhere is my high school paper, a written review giving like 4.5 out of 5 stars for The Phantom Menace. I thought that thing was the bomb before I realized it was total trash." And I wanted, and this is familiar, and this only happened a few weeks ago, and I just remember thinking to myself, I've heard this many, many times before. And so, Brian, rewinding the clock, way back, zooming back in time to 1999, moving on, you didn't have that moment. You're very public with your opinions about the prequels, and I happen to agree with nearly all of them. And you never had that moment where you realized, I'm doing air quotes here, realized that the movie was terrible. And I think this is a very, actually, I'm not even going to say what I think. I'm just going to say, why did you never come to your senses, Brian? Why did you not realize that The Phantom Menace was
terrible? How could I realize that something was terrible if, in fact, it wasn't terrible?
I have a few theories, but... Here's my theory. Well, I'll be honest. There's this crowd swimming downriver mentality of especially geek culture on the internet, that the wave of popular vocal internet fans is against the prequels. And at some point, you didn't realize. I would replace the word realize with conform to. And I think, And this has been discussed to death, but I mean, it's something that we all take seriously and had a great influence on our lives in one way or another, and so I think it's worth discussing. I think that when it comes to The Phantom Menace, being a nonconformist is different than just being someone who blindly likes the film, and I think people who, quote-unquote, hate the prequels to a certain passionate level that they do, I'm looking at you, Simon Pegg. I kid. But I think there's a certain level of just conformity to popular opinion. And what I find funny is that usually someone of this opinion would never realize that, because usually to say you dislike something is to go against the grain. But in this particular case, let's be honest, you got to get that dig in. It goes back to Dragon Con 2011.
Well, I mean, I've never felt that Star Wars was about conformity for me at all. And I will say that it does rub me, you know, sort of against the grain to hear people hate on it so passionately. But I find that there's reasons they hate on it so passionately, and they haven't thought about it. I think that there's a few big factors that came out of why people dislike The Phantom Menace so much, more than any of the other prequels.
Sure.
Attack of the Clones, people don't talk about, and Revenge of the Sith, people begrudgingly say, it wasn't that bad. And it's not even just people. It's a very narrow band of people from a very certain age range who happen to occupy lots of space on the internet.
That's a very good way to put it.
I'm going to get a t-shirt with that just one sentence right there.
So the problem is that, for one, what through all of growing up before the prequels was part of the Star Wars experience? It was knowing everything. It was knowing every line, knowing every image that's going to come on the screen, and having that safe familiarity like a security blanket. Mm-hmm. And here you walk into Phantom Menace for the first time, and a lot of these people who say they hate it so much have only seen it once in the theater and decided then and there that they hated it so bad that they'll never see it again. Well, how can that ever compare to a movie that you've seen a million times and have that familiarity with? And I'll admit, the first time I saw Phantom Menace, I was so wowed by the visuals I had no idea what I'd seen. And some of it seemed like it wasn't Star Wars. And as I watched the film more, what I realized is that it wasn't Star Wars. It's that it didn't have that gloss of familiarity to it. So the more I watched it, the more it felt comfortable, the more it felt part of the Star Wars universe that I knew. but it was so disjointed from the rest of it because you watch the classic films and everything is absolutely horrible. And Phantom Menace is bright and everything's clean and shiny and it doesn't jive. But it doesn't jive on purpose. And what good are seeing the dark times if we never see how bright the light was? And I think that that's something that a lot of people who watched Phantom Menace just hadn't considered at all, because they had a visceral reaction and not a logical one. And in my mind, yeah, Phantom Menace, I would say the worst I'll say about Phantom Menace is that it's probably the weakest of the Star Wars movies. But that's not, I mean, that's like saying it's the, you know, it's the least valuable nugget of gold. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's still valuable and it still has so much in it. And on Clone Wars, they've done so much to bolster how good it was. They've revisited so many themes and characters from that movie to validate it even further. But they didn't like Jar Jar because their favorite character in the classic trilogy was Han Solo. And there is no Han Solo character in the prequels. And one of the reasons that I attached so strongly to the prequels is that Han Solo was never my favorite character. It was always Darth Vader. It was always Anakin Skywalker. My favorite scene in the entire saga was always Anakin's death on the landing platform at the Death Star. Always. That was always my favorite scene. And learning to see how someone like that could fall so hard was always the most interesting story in the saga for me. But if you're watching it for a hotshot pilot and witty banter, yeah, the prequels aren't going to be for you. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm just rambling at this point. So interject with a question or something and get us back on somewhere.
That makes perfect sense. But how do you guys, and I'll open this up to everyone for discussion, but how do you think that someone can approach something like this? Let's say that Bethany loved the original trilogy but isn't a huge fan of the prequels, which is not the case. I really love the prequels. I like the characters in them, and they're films that are rich in history in Star Wars. I mean, you can feel that this civilization has been going on for forever, and the characters did capture my imagination.
Mm-hmm.
But
let's be honest, the prequels are in the storyline, it's the tale of the fall of the Republic. Even in The Phantom Menace, there's a certain level of corruption that's present, and it's still such a huge contrast. I think that's an even bigger statement, because when you're talking about a republic, you go back to Rome, go back to Athens, if you talk about a republic in the final, in its waning years as it's about to fall to corruption, then it's a dark story, and it's still way clean. That sliver of justice that you hear Obi-Wan talk about in Episode 4, that ancient time, a more civilized age, as he calls it, it's towards the end of it.
See, I always saw it as one of those things where, you know, as you look at it, it's just, I don't know, the all-encompassing aspect of it that I enjoyed the most. You know, I was listening to Brian, he was talking about not being a Han fan. I was a Han fan, and so when I went to the prequels, I remember being that same, like, whoa, all the floss and the glimmer and stuff. I didn't catch the fact that, you know, the Y-Wings were a little different at first, you know, and then, you know, when I did, I was kind of like, maybe I have an issue with that, and then I retconned it away, and I was like, hey, that works. But my roommates absolutely hated it, and I remember like immediately being defensive, because I was like, you know, the things that they were hating on it were just like, really, that's what you're gonna latch onto, that one thing, you know, mainly Jar Jar for the most part. But you know, I think about how the characters on that, you know, Qui-Gon and Darth Maul for me were always like the quintessential two, and the lightsaber battles there at the end and how they worked out. I don't know. It was just one of those things where it always got me moving. But, you know, with Riley, you were talking about how the prequel trilogy reminds you of something. For me, it's all about Revenge of the Sith. Not just the film, but the prequels themselves tell the tale of how the Revenge of the Sith comes to be. And then at the end, we see that Obi-Wan gets the last strike of the Jedi by basically disabling Anakin, or crippling him enough that he wasn't as strong as fast as he could have been, and so therefore the Sith weren't able to do all that they could, setting up the classic trilogy. But you know, I remember when I went in there, I kept thinking, you know, why do my friends hate it so much? And you've said it before, Riley, it's all about the idea you have going in, you know, the perceptions there when you go into it and you think, oh, it's going to be about clones. We're going to see Jedi fighting Jedi. And, you know, you remember seeing the sneak trailers and you see the Gungans marching out of the mist. And I remember when that scene actually happened, I was like, well, that's not as cool as it was in the trailer, you know, but my friends really leapt on that kind of thinking. And I don't know. I was loving everything about it that I got right back on the bandwagon of, dude, let's do some more Star Wars. This is fun. But there's definitely like that disengage for some people, you know, they see that one thing and they've got to go back and watch it again to get over it. And as Brian said, a lot of these people didn't.
Yeah, but I also like what Brian said about it being a visceral reaction and not a logical reaction. Because if you have a logical reaction and you think, you know, I don't really like these movies, then that's pretty much all that's where you go with it. You are basically, you're not engaged with it, and so you move on. And perhaps if someone asks you your opinion, you speak to it and say, well, you know, I wasn't a fan because of this, this, and this. But to me, it's the level of emotion that goes into prequel bashing, to me, is astounding. Because if I don't like something, I typically don't spend my time wasted on something that I don't appreciate.
Yeah, and what was it? It's like episode 32, Still Waters Run Deep, and I talked about this for 20 minutes once, and I usually don't remember specific episodes like that, but it's what's interesting to me is when, and this is when it gets entertaining, is when someone who dislikes the prequels on a very emotional level, as you guys have said, tries with great effort to make it logical, and that usually comes in the frame of this, and this part of the movie or moment of the movie or character in the movie was bad. And that's a very easy thing to do with the prequels, and it could be even be done, I would say, with the original trilogy. There are moments that you could pick at and say, well, this didn't work or that didn't work or this wasn't as good.
I tell those people to watch the story, not the movie.
Yeah, and that's the difference where I think the greatest case of trying to make a logical argument against the prequels comes in the form of Mike Stuklass's Red Letter Media, known by his internet name, Mr. Plinkett, his reviews of the prequels, respectively. And I just remember thinking to myself, when I as these were coming out, I was getting on the internet, really, as these were coming out. I was getting on the internet, I don't know, 2008, roughly. And so that's when these videos, the first series of videos came out, and I was like, oh, Phantom Menace. And I remember it was being widely circulated as the exalted as the ultimate damnation of against the Phantom Menace. And I just remember thinking to myself, I tried to watch part because so many people kept sending me links. And I was more, it was a more innocent time for me back in the internet. I was a little less bitter. So I was actually trying
before you were curled up in the ball in the shower crying. Why? Why so much hate? Why the dark side?
I had a very similar experience with the Red Letter Media reviews, and I'm not sure if you guys remember, but I actually bit the bullet and watched every minute of every one of them.
Oh,
and
I'm
wrote.
Sorry.
Oh, you're so brave.
Point by point disassembling of every nitpick in
an
8-part series.
That was awesome.
I will be honest, Brian, I have not had the opportunity to read the counterpoints, but I know someone else did it as well, and I can't remember. It was when the Revenge of the Sith one came out. But yeah, that was my reaction to it, because I just remember thinking to myself, these points are right if you were...
No, they're not. They're really not.
No, I was going to say, if, huge caveat, you're looking for specific out of context reasons to hate this film.
Well, additionally, you're looking for specific out of context reasons to hate the film and have only seen it once almost a decade ago and don't remember the details.
Mm-hmm. And then it pretends to be a great philosophical deconstruction. And that's what I think is fascinating to me, is because so many of the points are terribly out of context, because let's be honest, Star Wars, including the prequels, is a type of story that's been told before. It goes back to Joseph Campbell's Journey of the Hero. And to see the tragedy of Anakin Skywalker, there are many great tragedies that have been told in different forms of storytelling before.
Strategies are Palpatine, tragedies are Skywalkers.
Yes.
Both were right.
No, and that's the prequels really serve as an inverted hero's journey, as an opposite for the classic trilogy. Here you have someone who is forced on a hero's journey beyond his call, where no hero's journey in that regard existed. And here's someone who did finally answer the call to not adventure but duty with Anakin and the situation with his mother, and he wasn't prepared for it. He wasn't prepared emotionally for it. He wasn't prepared spiritually for it, and he wasn't prepared personally for it. And to watch someone who's not prepared for that fall is, I think, endlessly fascinating. And if people can ignore the fact that they don't happen to like Hayden Christensen's acting, which I do, I love Hayden
especially,
Christensen.
Especially, I mean,
movies.
He mastered the art, I think, by Revenge of the Sith.
But the thing is that I think he was so perfect for what he was supposed to be doing in Attack of the Clones. I mean, how else would a hormonal teenage monk react to being around Natalie Portman?
This is true.
Well, see, you know, I always hated the age difference there, but the more I thought about it, the more it makes sense. I mean, he just lost his mom. He wasn't equipped to deal with it. Now he's around Padme, who is older. She's beautiful. She is close to his age. He definitely latches on and has some mommy issues there.
Yeah.
And it's I like the way you phrased it, Brian, as an inverse to the original trilogy, because for you, what for you was the moment where Darth Vader tells Luke Skywalker there on the Death Star when he says, "You were right," in Return of the Jedi. For me, that moment, as someone who, you know, I haven't watched them in an odd order, but in terms of greater context, the prequels would be the first films I saw. For me, that moment was when Anakin Skywalker looked up from the lava where he was burning alive and said to Obi-Wan, "I hate you." And where you realize how far he has fallen from the beginning of that film. Some people said it was too fast, and I don't think if you're timing it is a good way to look at it. But it
5 seconds. 5 seconds. Well, we got to redo people, this.
Again, that's one of those things where people are like, "Nope, it happened too fast. I didn't buy it." But they weren't actually watching the movie again. They're not looking for the details. Look at what happens. Anakin says, he says at the end of Attack of the Clones, "I'm not going to let this happen again." He starts having visions of Padme and says, like, "I'm not going to let this happen." And where does he go for advice? He goes to Yoda. And what does Yoda say? "You're going to have to learn to let go." And what's the one thing he can't let go of? It's Padme. And Yoda has no idea that Anakin is talking about Padme. Yeah. Yoda's telling him the correct moral, dogmatic answer of the Jedi. But Palpatine does know about Padme, and Palpatine does know what Anakin wants to hear. And so when he goes to Palpatine for answers, Palpatine tells him exactly what he wants to hear. And if you notice, it's very deliberate that when Palpatine tells him to kill Dooku at the beginning, he doesn't hesitate. I mean, he does hesitate, but And he's regretful of it. But then when Mace Windu does it later, he's never trusted Mace. He's never liked Mace. What's his first interaction with Mace? Mace is telling him, "We're not going to train you. It's not going to happen. We don't like you. We don't trust you."
Yeah.
What happens when Anakin finally tries to confide in Mace and says, "Palpatine's a Sith Lord. We've got to take care of him." Mace says, "Go sit in the corner. We're going to take care of it. We'll let the big boys take care of it."
Basically, "I don't trust you.
You sit in the corner."
"Don't trust you."
When he gets to, I mean, Mace says that flat out. "If this is true, because I don't believe you yet, you'll have earned my trust." Meaning, "I haven't given it to you yet. We're going to go check this out and see if you're not, screwing
with
me."
That's a very human story. I mean, no one likes to be distrusted or disliked. And no one likes to be told something that they don't want to hear. And Anakin just shows you where that path goes if you are selfish and if you make certain choices, where the end of that path leads.
But people also have a need to feel comforted and loved and accepted. Mm-hmm. And Palpatine is the only person who gave him that. Mm-hmm. And so when someone who so obviously didn't trust him and expresses it verbally, and an entire order of people who have been,
that
have put him, I mean, look at what happened with the Jedi Order. I can't talk about the Clone Wars finale yet, but there's some things there that the Jedi Council do that might break their trust with Anakin. And look at what the position they put him in spying in Palpatine. They break his trust. They're going against the code. So,
yeah.
You know.
One very small part of this, and to me it's just interesting that it plays a part. It's not necessarily, oh, this is a deep, significant detail lost amongst the rest of the details. But the Jedi in the Clone Wars and in the prequel trilogy are really beginning to lose the trust war, the publicity war. And
it gets worse in the season finale.
Yeah,
they're losing their religion.
We've seen the previews, and we know that there's a Chamber of Judgment. And who decides? Okay, so you're and we haven't seen it, and obviously don't want to spoil it. This episode will go up either tonight or tomorrow, so our listeners will be, a lot of you will be listening to this after the season finale. We don't know it yet, but I can say this. If you're an order that decides that you need a chamber for trials and calls it to the Chamber of Judgment, I just got jury summons for the first time ever. Like, I just turned 21 7 months ago, and I got jury summons. They don't call it, you're summoned to the, I won't say where. You're summoned to the Chamber of Judgment. It doesn't really have a sense of justice in the title, and usually Star Wars is very, very direct in the way they do it. And
they've very much made up their minds about what they're going to do by the time it gets to that point.
But the Jedi,
Anakin Skywalker and the Chamber of Judgment. See it now.
Yeah. But the Jedi at this point in the timeline, I believe that they're suffering from not having a true focus, a true purpose. It's as if they don't quite know what their purpose is.
And they're
they just want to end the war. They're starting to do what Sith do. They're focusing on the ends, and they don't care about the means.
Losing
to get
your soul, in the meantime, it's kind of that. And to be honest, the Jedi Order is not the greatest support system at this point in the war. If you're a Jedi Knight. We get the sense, especially in the Clone Wars, and I think this is the happiest I've ever been with the direction that they've started going in the Clone Wars, is when there are Jedi who disagree with the Council as far as the war effort goes. Yeah. Knowing that there's that, because that makes ultimate sense. Even in, let's go to the original trilogy, did Luke look for the kind of support and love of friendship from Ben or Yoda in The Empire Strikes Back or Return of the Jedi? No, his support came from his friends, his sister, Han Solo. And that the original trilogy is a story of friendship, and Anakin Skywalker, as a protagonist, never had that.
I mean, he has it to some degree with Obi-Wan, but that's a very different relationship.
And how does this end? So, yeah. And that ends with him in the ashes yelling, I hate you. And it's...
And Brian...
Yeah.
Brian brought up something that made me think. You know, when Anakin's sitting there with Yoda, and Yoda's saying, you're going to have to let go, I just was thinking, I'm like, Yoda could have totally been thinking about Ahsoka. That the person Anakin's thinking of is Ahsoka, that obviously you need to let her go, Anakin, you know? Like, totally missing the boat there, and yet Anakin would totally, you know, have reason to be even more mad at not feeling, you know, that connection. You know, and that's what I love about doing this, you know, the podcasting. You know, you talk with people and their insight, and you start seeing things that you've watched 150 times. I mean, I'm about the same age as Brian. I'm 30, going on 34 right now. And, you know, that just came to me now, and I was like, whoa, why did I not ever think of that before? But I'm always having things like that where somebody's, you know, like Riley was saying in the post chat, he likes actors and things like that of the nature. I'm more the EU fan. And getting to talk about these things, it opens your mind to new things. And that is what I love about this community.
Yeah. That's what I love about Star Wars in general. I have seen these movies and watched these episodes of Clone Wars and read countless books and comics and anything else. And every time, every single time, it doesn't matter if it's Phantom Menace, Attack of the Clones, Sith, any of the classic trilogy, I see something new. And every conversation I have about it, somebody points out something I hadn't thought about before, or I'll get to rambling, as I want to do, and a point will come out of my mouth that I won't even have intended to make, and I'll have to draw back and say, huh, I really haven't thought about that like that before.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I love about this. It's such a rich mythology that informs so much philosophy and morality and you know, things of that nature in my life and in my brain that it's truly important on a personal level that no other movie could approach.
Yeah, the moral fabric of Star Wars is something that, especially, frankly, the original trilogy, the way it's told. And I mean, Brian, we would all agree on the prequel trilogy, but in this kind of Joseph Campbell's hero's journey, there's a moral fabric to Star Wars that goes beyond political affiliation, age, gender. It's why it's lasted so long. And like, Brian, I'll be honest, you're a political person. I am too, and we probably wouldn't agree on a lot of things. But in terms of like the idea of the moral fabric of Star Wars, that's something that I think we can really discuss in a very productive way, where we can talk about things like philosophy and right and wrong and the support of friendship and the hero's journey and things that really do matter. That's one of the greatest things that I think upsets me when it's whether you're a blogger or a podcaster or you name it. You do a Star Wars thing. I mean, you get that kind of mainstream thing, but that's not what it's about. It's not about the entertainment. I mean, that's a great, valuable thing, but that's not what it's about.
Well, and Star Wars has helped me figure out that look at the Jedi through the prequels. They don't think they're the bad guy.
Nope.
But they're easily manipulated into appearing as the bad guys, not only to the public, but they are so bent on appearing as the good guy that they in turn become, they sell out their ideals to appear as the good guys. You know, here they are leading battles, leading charges. That's what I've loved so much about stuff like the Onderon arc, where there's a human cost to their meddling. And they're doing it because it seems like that's what they're supposed to be doing, but they're not sure. They've lost their way. And
well, it's not just entirely that they've lost their way too, but they're losing their way. They're losing their soul, as Riley put it. But they don't even realize it because they're spread so thin. You can see that Yoda and Mace Windu, when they're talking about this in Revenge of the Sith, they're seeing it, but it's too late. They're in the twilight stages of being completely lost at that time. But they're spread so thin, and they're being run ragged. The Jedi that you see are really, they're tired. They're worn out. They're in a constant state of kill or be killed. Go from one battle to the next to the next. And that's in some ways why the episodes in the Clone Wars, like the Young Jedi arc, is so refreshing, because you get to see Ahsoka in an environment of teaching and of everyone learning. And yes, there is danger in those episodes, but you don't see this war-torn weariness and cynicism that has entered the Jedi culture.
Sort of the point I was coming to, though, is that no one, and this has taught me something politically about discourse and civil discourse.
Mm-hmm.
No one thinks they're wrong, and we all have the same goal. You know, we all want something better, and there's so many things that influence us that we're not even aware of that might make us so completely wrong, everyone, myself included, that we don't know, and we lose touch with everyone else's perspective, and we're played off against each other as enemies, the same way Palpatine plays off the Separatists in the Republic for his ends.
Yeah.
I think that it's very much the same way in our political landscape, from whatever view you're looking at.
Certainly, no.
Well, and Palpatine, the other beauty about it, he was so devious that he set the Jedi up so well that they were committing the treason. I mean, they were breaking the law. I mean, they actually walked right into it. And to be able to do that to them was great on his aspect of being, you know, the ultimate evil. Every time I think of all the things Palpatine accomplishes, not only in the films, but in the EU, he's a creepy, scary, intelligent, bad guy.
Yes, he is. And I really love the political connection, because you do get in this dogma of, and I hate, you know, I hate talking about politics, but I think in this frame, when you're talking about political parties where you really have to, you're right or you're wrong, and you have to line up with all these vastly different issues in terms of like a party platform, and if you don't perfectly line up, you've got to just straighten up and go along with it. And that's, you know, that's a trap we fall into in our own world, and that's a trap that the Jedi fall into. And, you know, was Yoda right when he told Anakin, you must let go? Was that true? I mean, in Yoda's perspective, that, you know, if Anakin had just let go and forgot about Padme, and he would have been fine. Yeah. If he just said, you know what, I'm married, but we're just going to forget about this whole family and marriage and love thing, and I'm just going to be a stoic Jedi for the rest of my life. But in so doing, I think, Anakin Skywalker would have lost a part of his soul and identity, and one of the very reasons he would fight for justice is Padme. And that's what leads him astray.
And one of the things that leads Anakin astray is he is so fearful. He tries so hard to avert what he thinks is going to happen that he winds up making it happen himself.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, indeed. And there's no shades of gray in that world. Where there shades of gray exist, you know, Obi-Wan says it, that only a Sith deals in absolutes, which I agree is ironic that he conveyed that sentiment in an absolute. But, you know, it's I'm right and you're wrong, and there's no middle ground.
Sure.
And that's what crippled that conflict. That's what forced them to have to fight without being able to find any common ground between them. That Anakin was trained to say, I'm right, you're wrong, end of story. Period. The way I've interpreted things are it. And, you know, I think that's a lot of the problems that we see politically on both sides of the aisle. I'm right, you're wrong, there's no middle ground, even though if they actually talked about it and were able to get past their dogma, that they would find that they're probably 85% of the way there together.
Yeah.
Well, apparently the Jedi Order just needed an Akbar Jedi. It's a trap!
Yes. Wow. And I've got the music playing. More quickly than I feel like we ever have before, burned through an hour, and it's getting later on here on the East Coast, so we got to wrap up. But man, Brian, thank you so much for coming on the show and just, you know, investing in it and offering us some really, really great insight to you as a person. I feel like we haven't touched on what you personally do in the world of Star Wars fandom nearly enough. So please, by all means, take these last couple minutes to let folks know what you're up to and where people can find you online.
Well, obviously, I'm working on the Full of Sith podcast. We're coming out with new episodes every Sunday night or Monday morning. I write for StarWars.com. Actually, I do a monthly column about the cinema behind Star Wars. So I take movies and watch them that have inspired either the Star Wars movies or the Clone Wars or sometimes the books. My last column was about Kagemusha, which is a Kurosawa film that George Lucas actually produced that was sort of remade thematically into an episode of the Clone Wars called The Shadow Warrior.
Mm-hmm.
And we explore that kind of stuff in the column. And, you know, I'm always reviewing the latest episode of Clone Wars or whatever else is going on with Star Wars news on my website, BigShinyRobot.com. And, you know, the easiest way for people to keep up with all of this stuff, because I will be shameless about tweeting it, will be on Twitter, where they can find me at Swankmotron, or Facebook. People can look me up on Facebook and find me there.
Perfect.
And I'll keep everybody updated.
That's fantastic. I'll tell you what, it's not shameless at all. It's only shameless if it's content to be ashamed of, and far from it. Brian, I'm a great admirer of your both written work and now with the podcast, the audio work you do. Keep carrying that torch, man. We'll be following you. And thank you so much for coming on the Star Wars Report podcast.
Yes, thank you. Really enjoyed this conversation and talking with you once again.
Oh, thanks for having me, guys.
It's good to finally get to talk to you and actually hear your voice. I've been following your tweets for a while.
Awesome. Oh, thanks.
All right, so that pretty much wraps it up. You guys can, again, follow us on Twitter at Star Wars Report, Facebook.com/Star Wars Report. Our website, just a little quick thing. I redesigned it last night. Work in progress. I'm not a WordPress designer by anything, but you can go to our website. That's where you'll find all the links that you want to find about the show. Thanks for subscribing. Thank you in advance for rating and reviewing the show on iTunes. That always helps us. And until next time, remember, many Bothans died to bring you this podcast and defend the Phantom Menace.